Good morning. My name is Grant. I'm one of the pastors here, and I am excited to jump into the second part of this series, How to Live Through a Bad Day. But before we jump into that, I just want to let you know about Easter weekend here at Willamette. It's going to be an amazing time. We're going to have a Good Friday service. All three of our campuses, Beaverton, Hope City, and us are all going to gather together here 7 o'clock Friday night, April 19th. I want to invite you to the Good Friday service. Also want to let you know that our Easter services, Easter here at Willamette, 6 p.m. Saturday night that weekend. We're going to have an Easter service. Our Sunday morning, we'll have our normal times, but we're adding a Saturday night service. That is a really, really good service to invite a friend to. We know that there's people that maybe can't come on a Sunday morning. Maybe they have to work or they do a work schedule that they need to sleep during this time. And so just want to let you know that that Saturday night thing is coming. And so you can invite them to Easter services that night. Also, I was adding an extra service and just knowing that Easter's a weekend where more and more people will come to church. If that's a weekend that you've maybe been thinking about volunteering, like being a host or a greeter or somebody to help us serve communion, or maybe up in the kids area, you're going, I don't know that I'm ready to commit to any one of those serve opportunities for a consistent basis. Easter weekend is a great weekend to try it on. To just come and say, hey, I know that we have more services and more people, so we need more help. And so just want you to know those are coming. Begin to think now about who you're going to invite and what the weekend plans would look like for you. Well, as I mentioned, we're in the second part of this series, How to Live Through a Bad Day. And last week, Chris and I did an amazing job of kicking us off in this sermon series. And we looked at the sixth statement of Jesus, right? It is finished. That let us know that we can be assured there is a purpose and an end. This week, we're going to be continuing in that, and we're going to look at the first statement. But before we do, I want to just remind you sort of the setup of this sermon series. You see, in Hebrews chapter 11, we have the Hall of Faith, where it gives us all these individuals that had great faith before us. And then Hebrews chapter 12 says, so since we're surrounded by these people, we need to take off every entanglement, every sin. We should strip everything back because we have all these witnesses that have gone before us. And then it continues to say in verse 1, and let us run the race with endurance. Let us run with endurance, the race that is set before us. It's saying God has set a race out before you. And man, that's life, isn't it? And life is just putting one foot in front of the other and doing the next thing and the next thing. And sometimes it's really easy, but sometimes it's hard. And we have bad days. And we have hard days. And so the scriptures say, then you're running this race. When you run the race, it's important to keep your eyes fixed on things. Which is why the next verse says, so keep your eyes fixed on Jesus. Focus in on him. He's the author and the perfecter of your faith. There was joy that was set before him. It was the cross. And so as you're running the race, watch Jesus. Act like Jesus. Do what Jesus did. And you do this because he scorned the shame of the cross. He scorned its shame and he sat down at the right hand of God. You see, it wasn't that Jesus just ran this race and he did this thing and he went and he died on a cross and that was it. No, he rose from the dead. And when you rise from the dead, that's something that we can look at and go, I need to learn how to do that. And so we go, Jesus, by your power, I too can defeat death. So when I'm running my race, I'm going to keep my eyes fixed on you. It's Eugene Peterson in his paraphrase of this text. He puts it this way. Keep your eyes on Jesus, who both began and finished this race. Study how he did it. He goes, as you're running this race, let's study how Jesus did it. And so that's this sermon series. We're going, okay, so when Jesus went to the cross, when he was up on the cross, his worst day, we call it Good Friday because of what it did for us, but it was his worst day, most painful day, most lonely day, most outcast day. On that day, what did Jesus do? What did Jesus say? Let's study what Jesus did and see what we can glean from that and how it would affect our lives on our bad days. So let's just remind each other what's happened to this point then before Jesus gets on the cross. 12 to 24 hours before that, Jesus was out in kind of a public green space. He was there with his disciples, those that were following him, his guys that were closest to him. He's there praying. He's asking God, he's going, God, I know, Father, that this hard day is coming, so would you take it from me? But if not, then help me to endure it. In the midst of that prayer, one of his disciples comes with an angry mob and some Roman soldiers and betrays him. One of his crew, one of the people that was close to them, wants somebody from his inner circle that he should have been able to trust, betrays him. The soldiers whisk Jesus off to a trial. In fact, throughout the night, there would be three different trials before two different rulers, all of which were illegal to do in their culture, both in Roman society and in Jewish culture. It was illegal to have a trial at night, and yet Jesus endured three of them. And during these illegal trials where they're bringing false accusations against him, they brought witnesses to come and make false statements against him, basically perjuring themselves. And in the midst of all of these things being lobbed at him, the people that were closest to him, the people he should be able to trust, they scatter. Oh, we don't know that guy. We want nothing to do with him. The rulers that had been at these trials, they couldn't find any fault or any guilt with Jesus. So they go back to the people and they say, we can't find any guilt in him. But their bloodthirst is so much in order to get rid of Jesus that they cry out to crucify him. And there wasn't really a good reason to do so. So one of the rulers took Jesus and most likely had his hands chained together up above his head and him bent over and his back exposed. And they would have stripped him of his clothing and then beaten him with a whip. At the end of that whip, there would have been strips of leather. They would have had metal balls on them to tenderize the skin. They would have had bone and hooks in order to dig into the skin and tear the flesh apart. There are some scholars that teach us and historians that this type of scourging was so brutal that some men didn't even live through it. They then took Jesus and they put a robe now on his broken, open, wounded back. And the soldiers put a crown of thorns on his head and they blindfold him and they begin to punch him and to hit him and say, you who claim to be God, prophesy who which one of us is hitting you. You see, Jesus endured psychological torture that day. He was privately humiliated. Thinking that this would have been enough, that he was taken back before the crowd outside and he said, what should we do? And again, they said, no, that's not enough. Crucify him. So they took a cross. It wouldn't have been the first time this cross was used. Most likely it had been used before. It had another man's blood and sweat already dried on it. And they put it on his back and he carried it up to a place called Golgotha. Or they then drove nails through his hands and through his feet. They would have then raised him up onto that cross and it would have dropped in with just those nails holding him in his place as he collapses and has to stand up on that nail in order to breathe. You see, that's a bad day. That's a bad day in 24 hours that I'll probably never even see in my lifetime. And so it's important when we think about how to live through a bad day, how do I survive a bad day, that we look at Jesus. And so we're going to look at the very first thing that Jesus said. After all of that pain, both the psychological torture, the public humiliation, now that he's on a cross naked before everyone, the private humiliation, all of the beatings, he's there. And through all of that, Jesus has never said anything publicly. Publicly, he's been silent through the entire ordeal. And now on the cross, for the first time for everyone to hear, is his first statement of defense. And he says, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they're doing. Father, forgive them, they don't know what they're doing? It's an amazing statement when you consider everything that's been done to him. I mean, I would expect him in that moment to be like, hey, do you know who I am? I am God. In a moment, angels could come and rescue me. I could call fire down from heaven and wipe all of you out, and me, I would still be standing here and my cross would not be on fire. Do you know who you're dealing with? Because guess what? I'm coming back. No. Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. I read that and I go, okay, the forgiveness part, we're going to spend a lot of time on that. But before we get there, they don't know what they're doing? Yeah, they do. They're killing you. they had opportunities to let you go. They let a man who was guilty go free so that you could get punished. Like Jesus, they know what they're doing. The Romans knew how to do this crucifixion thing. They had it down to a bit of a science and an art for them. Like the people were crying out. They knew exactly what was going on. Jesus, what do you mean? They don't know what they're doing. See, Jesus is pointing out for us in this moment that so often when we hurt other people or other people hurt us, we don't really understand all that we're doing. A statement that someone made to you years ago that has stayed with you and lingered, they probably didn't really understand that what they were saying and how much power it held. The thing that was done to you and the fact that you've carried it with you to the point that you're unwilling to forgive someone, the person that did that probably didn't really understand the ramifications of what was happening. See, Jesus is looking, going, all of these people, yeah, in a sense, they know what they're doing, but they don't know the depths of it. Which is why for so many of us, the cross is a hurdle that we just can't get over. We can't get over because we look at it and we go, why does somebody need to go die? Why does God have to come and die? The reason is because we don't fully understand the depth of our rebellion. And yet in the midst of that, Jesus can say, Father, forgive them. Because they don't know what they're doing. See, I hear that and I go, okay, I get it. I get that people don't know what they're doing, but forgiveness, that's easier said than done. Right? Because people are mean. Like people can do horrible things to each other. I don't know if you've ever taken one of those like personality tests, right? Maybe you're into Enneagram these days, or maybe you've done like a Life Languages or a PDP or the Strength Finder, right? And you take this test and it comes back and you look at it and it's like, oh, communication and intellect and whatever it is, all the different things that it can say, all the positive attributes that you have. But I'd venture to say some of you have probably done this with friends or family or colleagues, and you get it back and they're like reading through all of their things and you're like, yeah, but what it doesn't say is backstabber and liar and cheater and fraud. Because yeah, you've got those positive characteristics, but if this was an honest personality assessment, let me tell them what it should say. Or because we know that people can be mean and people can cut us off and they can do things to us that hurt us and that wound us deeply. And Jesus goes, yeah, I understand. I understand, but if I can forgive this offense when I'm on the cross, then you too can extend forgiveness to other people. In fact, this isn't the first time that Jesus has talked about forgiveness. It's not as if he got on the cross and that was the first time we heard him talk about it. No, he's talked to his disciples about forgiveness all along the way in his teaching. He's done moments where he's looked at them and said, listen, people are going to offend you and you're going to be offended. And so the fact that that's going to happen, you need to forgive them even when they offend you, which I think is important for me to think about and to remember, especially in a culture today where so many of us seem to wear a being offended just right here, right? Just under the surface, that if we can say, well, hey, you said something, you did something that offended me, then somehow that automatically gives me the moral high ground. Jesus goes, no, that's life. You're going to be offended. The thing to do would be to forgive them. When he's teaching us, his disciples, how to pray, right? We've often called it the Lord's Prayer. It's probably better called the Disciples' Prayer or the Everyday Prayer. The way that I memorized it goes, our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread and forgive us our trespasses. As we forgive those that trespass against us. You see, Jesus has been talking about forgiveness all along. He's been telling his disciples that they need to learn to forgive and they need to do it. It's something that they're called to do, that if they're gonna follow him, they don't really have much of a choice anymore. It's a command that he gives them. And so I read that and I hear that. And I go, man, Jesus on the cross is able to say, forgive them on his worst day. If that's the first step to forgiveness, then I need to learn how to forgive. But I don't like doing that. That's hard. That's not fun. I think part of the reason we struggle and we have such a difficulty forgiving people is we actually don't understand forgiveness. We've come to define forgiveness in all sorts of different ways. And so we define forgiveness as a thing that it never was meant to be and it isn't currently. And so I want to give you five things to help maybe redefine forgiveness this morning. You see, the first thing is that forgiveness does not minimize the seriousness of the offense. And when you forgive someone, it does not at all minimize what was done. And I know maybe you've had people that have asked you to forgive someone, and they go, hey, you need to forgive them. I mean, after all, it wasn't that big of a deal. Yes, it was. It was a big deal. Hey, you need to forgive them. I mean, aren't you kind of blowing this out of proportion? Aren't you making a mountain out of a molehill? No, I'm not. No, what they did to me was wrong, and it was painful, and it shouldn't have ever happened. Hey, forgive them. I mean, after all, it's okay. No, it wasn't. It was not okay. It is never okay. You see, when we talk about forgiveness, we don't at all want to give you the illusion that we're minimizing the offense of what was happened. It was offensive. It shouldn't have happened. That thing shouldn't have been said to you. It shouldn't have been done to you, but it happened, but you're still called to forgive. But even then, forgiveness is not reconciliation. So often we sort of accidentally put these two things together. We say, well, forgiveness and reconciliation, they go together, right? Like you go to someone and you say, hey, I forgive you. And then they come back and they act like nothing ever happened. And you get upset about it. And they're like, hey, I thought you said you forgave me. And you're like, oh no, I forgave you. But that bridge was still burned. And it's going to take some time, some energy, and some healing in order to build that bridge again. And maybe even then the bridge will never be mended. You see, forgiveness and reconciliation are two different things. I'm called to forgive all those who offend me. Yes, because Jesus has reconciled me to himself through the blood. When I didn't deserve reconciliation, I should strive to reconcile with everyone around me, absolutely. But reconciliation is a two-way street. It takes two parties to reconcile. Forgiveness is one way. Forgiveness says, I am willing to forgive you before you've even asked, before you even deserve it. I forgive you because I have been forgiven. I was talking to a friend about this a while back now, and they had somebody that was close to them that had done something to them in the midst of an argument and some things. It just wasn't healthy for the relationship, and it had the potential to really alter the relationship in some negative ways. But this friend was determined to forgive the individual that had done that. Knowing that that person was probably never going to ask for forgiveness, they didn't even realize what they had done. I said, how are you doing with that? They said, oh, I've forgiven them. Like, that's done with. I forgave them. But I also know that our relationship will never be the same. They won't know that. Like, I'm going to still be cordial and kind to them because they don't even realize what they did. But I'm going to forgive them, even though it means we won't be fully reconciled. Forgiveness is also not doing what is fair. Forgiveness isn't about doing what is fair. This one, we won't spend a lot of time on it because we get this one. Like, we don't actually like fairness, right? I've said before that I like justice for you and grace for me. But I don't like justice for me and grace for you. Right? That has to do with fairness. That's why that rubs us the wrong way. And so forgiveness is not about doing what is fair. If life was about fairness, if it was about being fair, then I would go be on the cross, then you would be on the cross, not Jesus. Because that would be fair. Fairness would be us dying, not him. In fact, it was C.S. Lewis who put it this way. To be Christian means to forgive the inexcusable, because God has forgiven the inexcusable in me. To be Christian means to forgive the inexcusable because God has forgiven the inexcusable in me. You see, forgiveness isn't about doing what is fair. Fourth, forgiveness is not impossible to do. And I know some of us in this room are going, yeah, it is. Like, Grant, you don't understand the pain that they caused me. You don't understand the thing that they said, that moment that happened. You don't understand the weight of that. And I've been carrying that weight for so long, it would be impossible for me to forgive them now. I would say you don't understand the power of the gospel, the power of the good news of Jesus, that if he on a cross can look at the people that are killing him in that moment, that have done all of the illegal things to him, that are falsely tried him, that have beaten him, and he can stand there in that moment and say, Father, forgive them. They don't even understand what they're doing. Then if I'm a follower of Jesus, I have the power of the Holy Spirit in me, which is the same that Jesus had. And therefore, if Jesus can forgive, I can forgive, because all things are possible. So yeah, it's possible, but it doesn't make it easy. You see, as we look at these four things, we're reminded that, okay, forgiveness isn't impossible, and it's not about doing what is fair, and it's not about reconciliation or minimizing the offense. And we need to redefine forgiveness and say, okay, it's not those things. There's one more thing, though. There's one more thing that forgiveness isn't. And this one, we're going to spend the rest of the time on this, because I really believe this one is where the rubber meets the road for most of us. You see, forgiveness is not for them. Forgiveness isn't for them. It's not even about them. The reason we forgive is for us. If you're carrying around bitterness and resentment and an unforgiving spirit, the only person it's destroying is you. There's one great thinker that put it this way, that said, the willingness to not forgive, or being not forgiving someone. Not forgiving someone, it's like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. You see, forgiveness isn't about them, it's all about me. Maybe for some of you, you have been mentally destroying someone in your mind every single day, or at least every week, since they did that thing to you. Meanwhile, while you destroy them in your mind, they haven't thought about the incident since. They've moved on. And that eats you up even more. You see, forgiveness isn't about them. It's about setting you free. Maybe an example of this from history that I think is a little bit helpful comes during the English Civil War in 1649. For those of you that maybe aren't familiar with the English Civil War of 1649, there's a guy named Oliver Cromwell. And Oliver Cromwell, he got a group of men around him and an army, and they started a war against the monarchy that was in power at the time, called the Royalists. And the king of the Royalists was Prince Charles I. And so they wage war against Prince Charles I, and a little after the war goes on for a time, they end up successfully overthrowing the government. And so they overthrow it, and these men gather together, and 59 of them sign the death warrant of King Charles I. 59 of them all put their name, their signature on a piece of paper saying, "We have tried him and found him guilty," and they hang him and kill him. And this new party stays in power for the next 11 years. 11 years, things are going great, and they think they've moved on, and they're loving their life, and things are going well. But you see, during that time, during that 11 years, King Charles I, his son, well, he's grown up. And he's ready to take revenge on what was done to dear old dad. So we actually have a picture of him as well here. This is King Charles II. Okay, not really. That's King Charles II. But let's be honest. Come on now, right? I'm just saying. Now we know who they played that part after, right? So you've got Chuck 2.0 here, right? And he's the king now. He's overthrown the government. He's taken the throne back. And what he does is he goes to his soldiers and he says, "I want you to go find the 59 men that signed that document. I've been waiting 11 years to get back at them. Round them up. We're going to put them on trial and we will kill them." So they begin to round them up, only to find out that 15 of the 59 are already dead. But that wasn't good enough. In fact, one of those that had died was Oliver Cromwell himself. And so King Charles II goes, no, that's their death wasn't enough. He goes and exhumes their bodies from the grave, brings their dead body into the courtroom, and he puts the corpse on trial. Talk about digging up the past, right? Like, he puts these corpses on trial. Like, I don't even know, how do you defend yourself? You're dead, right? Like, he puts them on trial, finds them guilty, and then takes these 15 corpses outside of the courtroom, has them hung up for everybody to see, then taken down and beheaded. Bro, they're already dead. You see, when bitterness and resentment come in and you're unwilling to forgive, it makes you do things that are ridiculous. Because you are so focused on the rage and the anger and getting back rather than letting it go and forgiving them. Maybe to demonstrate this another way, there's a great illustration of this that I've seen. And so I want to do that, but I needed a volunteer to do it. And so this morning I pre-picked somebody. Tiny, come on up, man. Everybody give it up for Tiny. That was really cold, people. Come on. There we go. All right, Michael. Yeah. All right, Tiny, how you doing? How you doing? Good, man. We've got an X here, right. So you stay in the light. Right, because this is on camera being streamed live on YouTube, so no pressure. It's a great illustration here. Thanks for doing this. Tiny Iron Men's community together. We met at Man Camp last year, and so here's the deal. This is going to be, I think, a really good illustration, but it all depends on you.
All right.
Okay, no pressure.
None at all.
People's eternity is at stake. Okay. Sweet. So now, all right. Here's the deal. Here's the thing. Is in life, right? We go through life, and life happens, and it's going, and you're cruising along just great. But then somebody does something to you. And it hurts you and it wounds you. And so life comes at you. And then that's fine. Like you can kind of walk around with that, right? We started with Hebrews chapter 12, right? That said, run the race set before us. So like, let's, like how, okay, are you a runner at all?
Do I look like a runner?
I mean, I don't know. I learned a long time ago never to assume anything.
Exactly.
Okay, right. So, right. Like, but you're still mobile. You can move around just enough, right? But then life keeps coming, right? And somebody else offends you. And that hurts you a bit. So now you're carrying around, okay, it's good. But right, you, me, Smash Mouth, we know that the years keep coming and they don't stop coming, right? And so like now, like the offenses just keep coming at you one after the other after the other. And it's getting harder and harder to hold on to it and to catch these things, right? And I mean, yeah, it's just, oh no. See, now you're dropping them, it's flying. Now your toxicity is affecting the front row over here, right? And so then, oh, wait, Tiny, I forgot. There was that one thing that happened to you when you were tiny, right? That you've been carrying around a long time. And so it's grown a little bit. It's a little bit bigger than the rest of them. And so we've got to find a place to put this one now. And so I see one spot. I'm going to need you to stand like this.
All right.
Okay, here we go. There we now. Yeah, perfect. Okay, you got it, right?
Got it.
But here's the thing, right? Now life keeps coming. And it keeps coming, but now, I mean, they've all kind of been these offenses. Then small things start happening. Like somebody cuts you off in traffic and it ruins the rest of your day, right? Or somebody doesn't pay you back for the thing that you borrowed. They borrow your car and they don't fill it up with gas. And now all of a sudden you just can't run as much.
Not so much.
Right? I mean, here, I think people need to get a better view. Can we turn? There we go. Yeah, see? Like this is the way that life goes. And it's such an identity thing, you can't even let it go. Now, here's what you've forgotten. You're going to have to hold that for a minute. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 31 and 32 says this. Get rid of all bitterness, rage, anger, brawling, slander, along with every form of malice. Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just as Christ Jesus forgave you. So you see, Tiny, here's the deal. You've got all of that that you're carrying, but there's another ball that you could carry around. It's the ball of forgiveness, right? It's much lighter. It's much easier. I've had it in my pocket the entire time because when you carry this one around, it makes it easy to go, hey, I forgive you. I don't have to be way down. How you doing, by the way?
I'm ready for that ball.
Okay, yeah, right? And so here's the thing. I've got another one, but it's your choice. Yeah. It's your choice whether you're willing to let go of everything and hold on to Jesus. Here it comes. Yeah.
Here it is.
Now, how much easier is that to carry?
Dude, I like this one a lot.
Right?
Yeah.
It's easier to, you can go through life carrying that. It doesn't weigh you down.
No.
Man, keep that. Thank you. Everybody, give it up for Tiny. Right? It's a simple illustration. But it reminds all of us that when we're unwilling to forgive each other, like that's how we end up standing around life. And now when we read Hebrews and it says, so run the race, you're like, I can't. I can't because I'm holding on to this unforgiveness. The bitterness has taken root so deep inside of me. I can't even keep my eyes fixed on Jesus anymore. And Jesus steps onto the cross and he demonstrates for us that on our worst days, we can say, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. And so if forgiveness is that big of a deal, and if it really does free you up, then if you're struggling with it, how do we begin to forgive, right? Because we have to start somewhere. Luke chapter 6, here's what Jesus has to say. He's talking about your enemies. He says, when you're dealing with your enemies, but I tell you who hear me, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who mistreat you. I'm going to take these in reverse order. Pray for them. If there's somebody in your life that you are having a hard time forgiving, begin to pray for them. It's amazing when we pray for people how hard it is to stay mad and to stay angry and to stay bitter. Begin to pray for them. And I know some of you are like, oh, I pray for them. I pray that their spouse would leave them, that their kids would be ugly, and that every chocolate chip cookie they bite into is raisin. Right? Like some of you, you're like, oh, I pray. That's not what we're talking about, okay? Like genuinely pray for them. Pray, God, would you make yourself known to them more? Pray for their success. Pray for their benefit. And then as you do that, you're going to change the way you think and you're going to be able to bless them. Blessing them has to do with the things that we say. And that we would say, and I'm no longer going to curse them privately or publicly. And that as far as it depends on me, I'm going to live at peace with them. Which means I'm no longer going to gather around the water cooler at work and engage in spouse bashing. It means I'm going to be careful who I complain about to my boss and my coworkers and my colleagues. And please hear me. We're fans of community here, right? Like it's why we talk about men's and women's and rooted. And we say, get into a home community, do this. You need to have a safe place where you can share the honest things of life. But hopefully those relationships are safe enough that they're able to recognize, whoa, you're moving from being honest about what's going on into bitterness, which is then when you need to say, okay, I need to begin to bless them. It's almost as if Thumper knew what he was saying when he said, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. All right, just begin to bless them. And then do good to them. Look for opportunities and ways to serve them. Find ways that you can be kind to them. This is what Paul picks up on when he says, listen, if your enemy is hungry, give them something to eat. If they're thirsty, give them something to drink. If they have a need that would help them go through life, go be generous with them. Sacrifice, serve your enemy. Go care for them. The way we said that in my house growing up was kill them with kindness. Go bless them and go do good to them. So these are the things that Jesus has laid out. He says, you want to learn to forgive. And this is how you can begin. I want to tell you one last story of where I learned the depth of the forgiveness of God. See, some years ago now, I was working at a church. And while I was working at that church, one of the young men on staff, one of our leaders, they were in a role of leadership at the church. One of the young men on our staff, he had a moral failing. It was a moral failing that was going to affect the entire congregation. It was going to affect the entire church, especially the staff. And it was one of those moral failings that it didn't just like come out and sort of slowly make its way through the town and the congregation that this had happened. No, this was something that when it came out, what he had done, it hit the front page of the newspaper. Everybody knew. Everybody knew the dirt of his life. And we were left trying to figure out, well, how do you pick up these pieces and then how do you move forward and how do you do it? And I'm glad to say that this is a church that handled it so well. Because you see, right after it happened, we had a staff meeting. We gathered all the staff in together and we went because we were kind of going like what happens next? Like, what happens now? Like, where do we go from this? And we're all reeling from it and our lead pastor is there. What we didn't know coming to that staff meeting is that our lead pastor had invited the young man from the staff that had the moral failing, his wife and his kids. And so we walk into the staff meeting and there they all are. And our lead pastor said, I want to tell you a story. He said, see, the moment I found out what happened, The moment I found out about it, I called him. I called the young man. I invited him and his wife over to my house. We invited him because we wanted to sit down and just chat with him and see where they're at. And yes, absolutely, there's ramifications that he immediately resigned and he no longer works at the church, but we are a church that wants to care and love for people even on their worst days. And he said, so I invited him over and he said, I opened the front door. And as I went to give him a hug and as he went to embrace me, before I could even do it, he stopped me. And with tears in his eyes, he said, I'm so sorry. Please forgive me. And our lead pastor looked at him and he said, thanks for asking, but you didn't have to. You see, I forgave you the moment I found out because that's what God has done for me. That when I was far from him, when I was his enemy, before I even knew how to say, I'm sorry, he went to the cross and he said, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. And he says, so yeah, you're forgiven. Absolutely, that's done. Then though, the pastor turned and he looked at the rest of us in the room. Remember, this is a church staff, and so we're assuming everybody's a Christian. And he goes, so here's the deal. What he's done, it affects everybody in this room in different ways. But if you're a follower of Jesus, you don't really have a choice in forgiveness. It's a command by God, but you do have the choice in the sense that it's yours whether to extend it or not. But if you don't, you're being disobedient to what Jesus has commanded you to do. And one by one, we had an opportunity to walk by him and to give him a hug and to look him in the eye and say, I love you. This moment doesn't have to define you. And I forgive you. See, it was a moment that I'll never forget where I had to wrestle internally with, can I get up and say that to him? And I went, well, gosh, what was freely given to me, I've got to freely give to other people. And so if you're a follower of Jesus in the room and you've been carrying around the weight of bitterness and unforgiveness for so long, I want to come to you and say, why are you carrying it around? Jesus has set you free. You have been forgiven, so you can go to the person that you feel like ruined your career. You can go to the person that if they had not done that thing, it would have allowed you to have greater opportunities to fulfill your goals, to fulfill your dreams. You can go to the person now that is holding you back, that you feel like is blocking you, and they may not even understand it. You don't even have to say it to them, but you can go, you know what, I forgive them. Forgive them because I've been forgiven. Those who have been forgiven freely forgive. Maybe some of you in the room, though, you don't yet follow Jesus. And if you're not yet a follower of Jesus, one, I'm super glad that you're here. This is a safe place where you can come and explore our faith. But I understand why you would have a hard time forgiving someone because you haven't experienced the depth of forgiveness that God has for you. And you don't understand that you've got a God that when he went to the cross and he said they don't understand what they are doing, he wasn't just talking about the people there watching him and the Roman soldiers. No, he was talking about you and me. He said, God, every time they rebel against you, they don't understand what they're doing. Which is why that Hebrews 12 passage says that he scorned the cross and he is now seated at the right hand of the Father. And every single time we do something, he goes, no, Father, that one's trusted in me. They're mine. But some of you haven't experienced that yet. So you need to say, God, I trust you. You've extended forgiveness to me and I want to embrace it fully. Thank you for forgiving me before I even knew how to ask for it. If you're in either one of those camps, I want to let you know that right after the service, we're going to have prayer here. On either side down in these wings, we'll have people that would love to pray for you. And maybe to come to you and say, listen, I'm struggling with forgiving someone, and I know God has commanded me to do it, but it's hard. We get it. We want to walk with you in that. Or to go, listen, I've never experienced the forgiveness and the love of Jesus, and I'd love to have a conversation with somebody about what that looks like for the first time. Those people are here for you. But for all of us, the beauty is that we look at this first public statement of Jesus after the horrible day that he had had, and he says, you want to know the first step to surviving a bad day? You forgive those who are trying to ruin your life.